You're with Len Vidopek on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the final hour of my Saturday show. Thanks for joining me. I'm Len Vidopek. This is today's News Talk TNT. Danny was great value. He is on his way to Crete to entertain, edify, inform, and basically have a good time. Meanwhile, I hope that you're enjoying the service here. Coming up in a few minutes, we've got Ash Mahmood about a new film, which is an important social commentary, and one which I think you, as a viewer of the most free-speaking media platform on the planet, would appreciate. More of that from Ash in his own words in a minute. Before we go to him, let me read some of the comments which have been created by yourselves in terms of Danny, my comedian. And there used to be a show called Real Tappers and Shunters. And some people are showing your age now. Mally Bite says, oh my goodness, I love that show. Now I get a sense of your age, Mally. And Holly goes, E by gum. Talk about stereotypical. That probably is hate speech. Probably is hate speech there, I suspect. Under the Scottish laws, they should be tested. Little Carol, yes, Danny, mummy in Hartlepool. That's probably a reference to his accent as well, which I suspect wasn't put on. He really does speak like that. Just a bloke's going into the E by gum thing now. Holly shouting, it was a joke, irony. I understand that. I was always bemused by the Wheel Tampers and Shunters show, whatever it was called. It was quite a long title, I think, and I saw that in the 70s. Hardly surprising it's not on air anymore. Maybe it was a series for its time. Holly says, also, we think you're very funny, good guest. Excellent. Danny gets praise. Danny, I hope you're still listening. Josh Bloke agrees. Nice chap, Lembit. Yep. And enjoyed that. I did too. It was just a bit of a change, a bit of fun today. A great guest, Danny, says Little Carol. I hope he said, I'm the turn when he went to the posh hotel. No, he's going to the posh hotel. He'll be hopefully saying, I'm the turn or something like that. Mally Bice also adds, Lembit, I'm part of the Voice of Wales team, but I'm Derbyshire, mate. I identify as a sir. My late pops was Welsh from Pentre in the Rhondda Valley, and my British Legion membership is at Llandudno. My late pops married a farmer's daughter, so I guess he loved his sheep, LOL. Yes, too much information there. Thanks very much. Spyro Jai says, what's all this with 80s B-movie music? Well, if you don't like it, just go and make a cup of tea and come back. The bit that matters to me is that you listen to me. That's what matters. Lots of chat about Wales now. You're all going off on a bit of a tangent. But let me just say a couple of things before we go to my next guest. First of all, we're very honoured here at today's News Talk TNT to get some of the most far-reaching and independent-minded directors, producers, and actors in the world of creativity. Why do they come here? Because we ask them. Why do we ask them? Because in the humble opinion of this presenter, the mainstream media is now in a collision course with conformity. Maybe it always has been. But I've noticed more recently that if you stand out from the crowd, if you dare to question the climate crisis, then you don't get so much work. If you don't like the pronoun obsession, you get criticized. If you think that offense is an acceptable form of entertainment, comedy, and dialogue, then people will shut you down for being offensive. What I really respect is those people in the community of broadcasting and filmmaking who still regard creativity as an important medium of significant expression. It's in this context that we'll be talking with my next guest about a film which he's been involved with, which actually ties in with let's just put it this way, a very current social issue. I'm not trying to make it sound mysterious. I just don't want to draw the witness using my words. Ash Mahmood, I've known for some time now, not a huge length of time, but I'm very impressed with him and also with his brother, Naheem, both of whom are in the same sector and both of whom share a mindset. So in the remaining 50 minutes of this show, I wanted to do two things. First of all, obviously, enjoy the input and the content you get from Ash Mahmood, but also And perhaps even more importantly, ask yourself this question. What is the nature and the purpose of creativity in the modern world? To what extent should we allow free expression, even when that's offensive, in order to protect not just the body politic, but the mind philosophical? Is it the case that we shouldn't ever really choose to limit the reach of creativity, even when other people find that uncomfortable? My answer to that is yes. As a libertarian, I'm willing to be offended by your commentary, by your opinions, and also by your values if they're different to mine. What matters to me, though, in a free society, and I hope you agree with this, is your right to express those contrarian views. We should have the right to offend each other, but not have the right to silence each other for the act of causing offense. Now, I put that forward because not because Ash is offensive, he's quite the opposite, but because he lives in a world which doesn't feel comfortable to the mainstream. You'll find out why in a minute. All of that with me, Lemotopic, right here on TNT.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I've built you up fairly big time there, Ash, as a spokesperson for the generation of free thinkers. There is so much I can read about you, but I want you, and I will read some of it. You're an award-winning filmmaker. I've already implied that. Activist, you're a science teacher. And at the start of the COVID tyranny, you're one of the people who stood out against that. But Ash, in your words, why don't you describe how you would put yourself forward? What are the things that our viewers all over the planet should know about you?
First of all, thank you. Thank you very much, Lembit, for inviting me onto your show. It's an absolute honor and privilege to be in your company. And thank you for giving me this platform, because it's a really important time for me. I think it's a very poignant time. And I will straight away link it to what I saw in the Times newspaper, which is related to the film Playing God that I've had the privilege to direct. It's a very intimate and very personal film. But I think in the newspaper, the Times, they have just had an expose where they've talked about the cover-up that took place with the hemophiliac children, because the blood was contaminated. Their blood was contaminated, knowingly contaminated, and yet they experimented on these children, of whom nearly all of them died. I think there were only about a dozen or so who survived. So there's a huge cover-up there. And it's very poignant, because the Playing God film that I've been very fortunate and blessed to be part of, it was also made with my brother, who you've spoken to already, Naim Mahmood, and you've seen his amazing film, Gods of Their Own Religion. So having his expertise as well, and for the two of us to get back together again, because I'd taken quite a hiatus out of filmmaking because I was quite disillusioned with mainstream films and television and the propaganda machine that it was becoming. So I took time out. So to be able to come back again and be able to give voice to people, to speak their truth without any fear or favor or censorship, but just for them to speak the truth, and not any truth, but really heartbreaking stories about the most grievous things that have happened to them, with huge amounts of evidence and covered up. I mean, this is not just people who are so courageous. It's being courageous is one thing, but these people are beyond courageous. I have to make a new word, because these people have been gaslit. They've been promised the truth by mainstream media, by newspaper outlets, and so many other institutions. And at every stage, they've been gaslit. They've had their stories covered up. So everything was covered up anyway. And then the report that was meant to tell the truth has covered it all up again. And the bereaved families have said, we'd been better off just to have been silent and the truth never to come out, because this is not the truth. The cover-ups just continue. And just listening to these people, I mean, it's the way it started for me is really the last 4 years. I saw what was happening and I just saw through it straight away. There was no way that I was going to be under house arrest. There was no way that people I thought should stop working and their livelihood should be destroyed. There was no way that I wanted people to be, elderly people to be locked up in care homes and moved out of hospitals. I'm, you know, my parents are quite elderly. There's no way one of them not to see their grandchild, to meet with them myself. Of course, I wanted to meet with them. I wanted to meet my brother. I wanted to meet with my friends. I wanted to meet anybody. I wanted to bring in homeless people, anyone who needed any help. I just wanted to meet people like we always did, and especially at this time. So I saw through all of this, and then it got worse because then they started to impose masks on people. They started to tell people you can't go out for more than an hour, and if you're sitting on a bench, you can't sit there. Then they curtailed our right to protest. And it just got more and more crazy, to the point where, you know, people started to die in care homes. And then all of a sudden we heard about this suddenly 18 vaccine manufacturers all had a, you know, this wonderful anecdote that was going to save us all and let us live our lives and give us our freedoms back, as if anyone could ever take our freedom, because freedom is inherent. So it was all a lie. It was all an illusion. So for me, it just, my gut just said no. And then I looked around to try and find anybody else who was on the same page. I luckily came across my brother, and the two of us got very close during this period. And he's been a fantastic, Naeem, that is, he's been a fantastic support for me. And we can bounce ideas off each other. And he brought a lot of clarity in my life during this period. And I found a toy shop owner on Twitter, and he said he'll give a 10% discount if anybody comes to his toy shop without a mask. So I went straight to his toy shop. It was Christmas. He was defying the lockdowns, and took a group of kids there so that they could buy some Christmas presents and make it feel like it was Christmas for them. Then they could come to back to my house and we could have a small party. And just for the sanity of these children and these families. And so I wanted to document his story, because there was nothing about this man. This man was doing what I thought to be right, that he was entitled to have his livelihood, to continue to be able to maintain his livelihood for his family, for his young children. And so I documented his story. Unfortunately, in the end, the police forced him to shut down and threatened him with arrests. And he did shut down, sadly. And but that story then led me on to far more deeper and far more sinister things. I then had a lady who contacted me and said she'd wanted to talk about her mother, who had died with a cocktail of drugs called midazolam and morphine. This was pre-COVID. And when I interviewed that lady, I discovered many other people. And then it became like cases, historic cases, going back to 1978. So it was an 88-year-old woman whose story had been completely buried, even though she showed me all her documentation. And it clearly stated that the drug Epilim had killed her, was responsible for the death of her daughter, only 12 years old. And and another lady contacted me to say, please interview this lady called Joan, who's featured in the film, because she's 88. We don't know if you'll ever, we haven't got perhaps much time to get a voice out there. So I felt really moved and duty bound to that this person had entrusted me to tell her truth. So I was going to do that at any cost, not on YouTube, because YouTube had already blocked my previous video with this toy shop owner. And he was pretty fairly mainstream, apart from the fact that he said that he wouldn't want to close his shop down, and he didn't want to wear a mask because it was affecting his mental health, and he wanted to earn a living. And that straight away, that was banned. So it was crazy. So I set up BitChute, and I called my channel Planet Uplift, because I know the stories were very, very tragic that I was receiving. But I think sometimes from all this darkness, there is a light in all of this, and there is a truth, and we can learn from these people. And this poor lady, Joan, has been shouting for the last 44 years, has been heavily silenced. And I thought to myself, if people had listened to her, or if she had been given a voice and a platform, instead of being gaslit all the time and had cover-up after cover-up, an inquest hiding this important piece of evidence that showed that the Epilim drug had killed her daughter and she didn't even potentially have epilepsy, then we might not have been in this position, but we've had all these cover-ups, you see. And so I was completely moved and touched, and I interviewed Joan, and then I met Anne, who's also featured in the film. And I just felt like suddenly my purpose in life aligned, and I had this amazing sort of energy that just never seemed to stop. And I was driving here and driving other places across the country and just trying to gather the truth, because these people were so isolated, so silenced, and they'd been, police had threatened them, and they'd said that they're crazy, and they tried to section them and all sorts of horrendous things. Their families had been divided and broken up. I mean, it's caused horrendous carnage, really. And that's 1978. Then we had this poor lady. We're talking about children. You know, I'm a father myself. I work with children. I understand the angelic quality that children have, the fact that there's so much more purity in the children from wherever they've come from in the previous lives, or it's just hearing the story. And then we had Anne, who you've seen in the film as well, with her husband Graham, who's lost his sight, and Anne's had cancer since as well, and their baby was experimented on. I mean, I cannot, and the whole thing was covered up. It was just a pack of lies, lie after lie after lie, and it was almost as if they were just continuously trying to experiment on it to see what they could do. I mean, it's, sorry to have to talk about this. I mean, I know that some people couldn't even watch that stuff because it's so heavy, but it's so powerful, and it's what Anne wanted. Anne wants her story out because she got her hopes up in 2017 that the Jeremy Hunt was going to commission a report that will tell the truth. And they groomed them. They're the people, Bill Kirkup, who wrote the report, 120-page report. When you read the report on the surface, if you didn't know the people involved, you would think, oh, wow, this is a very nice, report with some, sounds like pretty horrific stuff. But it doesn't go into the criminality of what took place. It sort of makes it out like terrible negligence. And it's just one abuse, one medical abuse after another on a baby. You know, this is horrendous, really. And it's not, these just one-off cases. I could have interviewed many, many, many more people who've since come forward and were contacting me for Planet Uplift as well, where I try to give the truth to and the voices to people. And I've also met Vicky. I don't know if you saw Vicky in the film, who lost her husband about my age. He was about 47 at the time. I was about 47. A healthy young man, and he took the AstraZeneca jab, again, not for himself, but because they said it's for the greater good, to protect the elderly. And he died from a blood clot in his brain. It's horrendous, yeah. Really.
Hold on. I want to come back to that. I want to read you some of the quite moving comments in the chat at tntradio.live as well. I want to explore why in the film you talk about democide. We can talk about the definition of that in a short while, quite a simple definition. It's a tremendously moving piece of work. And the other interesting thing, that there's one reason why I think we have to take that seriously, this film, which is very, very challenging to the state. And I'll explain why I think that it has to be taken seriously in just a moment. Listen to Ash Mahmood, who has been absolutely central in the making of Playing God, which is a look at medical democide in the UK. We'll find out what that exactly means in a minute, why this film has to be taken seriously, and perhaps why you haven't heard of it till now. All of that with me on the Lembotopic Show and today's news talk. We'll see you in a minute.
TNT's Jason Burmess.
Unfortunately, constantly, I'm talking to these political analysts that don't see any way out of the current situation except vote harder. And then every time that I bring up the fact that we have not only a corrupt system via the mail-in ballots, via the ballot harvesting, but the machines, I get a lot of radio silence. I get sometimes a nod and an agreement with me, but there's never a solution that's presented other than we need to go back to paper ballots and voter ID. Duh. Can anyone tell me how we get there? Can anybody tell me how we get there?
Jason Burmess on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Listen up!
Now listen, we gotta talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembotopic Show here on today's News Talk TNT. I'm with Ash Mahmood, a film director, and the man who is behind the film, very moving film, Playing God. A few comments before we go back to Ash, and I've got some questions myself as well. There's quite a long debate about what Wheel Tappers and Shunters were. Social Club, that's what it was called. Yeah, the film, the program was. It was just about something that they did with trains, apparently. Sometimes the wheels would get stuck and they get banged to get them unstuck. And apparently then they moved better. I don't want to go too far down that path. If you want to be involved in the chat about Wheel Tappers and Shutters, go to tntradio.live and get involved in the chat. But thank you for the clarifications. Shorty 2 about Playing God, the film, says Jackie DeVoy is a total heroine as she's involved in the film. Well done all working on Playing God, and thank you. So there's praise there. Mazzy says, yes, cover-ups by our government and the authorities are monumental. And Just of Locads, if you haven't seen Playing God yet, it's heartbreaking. Had me in floods of tears. And Just of Locads actually put the link to the film there as well. So you can actually go to tntradio.live and have a look at Just of Locads' connection there. And Shorty 222 says, yep, definitely tears, but a must watch, which is fascinating. Madrid says murdered, question mark, which is interesting. I'll put that to Ash in a minute. Some still residual conversation about labels and pronouns as well. But so I don't want to get into that now. I don't want to change the mood too much at the moment because we're talking about something really serious. And I want to come back to you now, Ash. A lot of positivity and quite a lot of people have seen this film. It says at the beginning, at the end, that this is a study of the of democide in the UK. Now, I understand that democide, the definition of the word that you use in the film, is the killing of an individual by the state. Why did you choose that word?
This, I think, was the idea of Jackie DeVoy, the producer. And she felt that with all the protocols, like the protocols that were put out for the cocktail of midazolam and morphine that was given to put a lot of people of end of life pathways who didn't need that. That's an example of democide with those people. And then some of the, you know, the ideas of the state in terms of giving experimental injections in the name of this pandemic. This was another example of putting people's lives at risk to the point where many of them lost their lives. And it was very, very reckless. And now seemingly the longer it goes on, the more sort of heartless decision, because at the very least, so many people have questioned, you know, the necessity of having all of these measures, let alone a jab. You know, for this, you're mass vaccinate, trying to mass vaccinate the population. As much as they denied it, they were, because they were coercing people, they were blackmailing people, they were, you know, offering, they were gaslighting people, they were telling young people, children and young people, that you might be responsible for your grandmother's death if you go out and hang around with your friends, or if you dare to go out. A daughter confessed to me at school and said, Mum was giving me food on a tennis racket when I was ill because she didn't want to get sick, and she didn't let me leave my room for about 10 days because she tested on a dubious test for COVID. So they got all the people into this conditioning, blaming children for being potentially, you know, biohazardous, toxic beings. And then on the back of that, they started to get people to take the jab, and then they're saying, we're not forcing anyone. You know, you couldn't go to a football match, you couldn't travel, you couldn't work. Friends of mine had to work abroad, and they said, well, you can't travel unless you get the jab. And he said, well, I don't want to get the jab. Well, then, you know, you're going to be, we won't employ you anymore. And then people were just put under huge pressure. And there was no, you know, we're talking about an experimental vaccine, you know, a new technology. And there were studies coming out of Israel already, because Israel had started their experimentation already. And there was so much data coming out of America, and there was so much other stuff that was starting to be leaked. And it was making you question that, hold on a minute, is this necessary? Because they were telling us, the very own chief medical officer, Chris Whitty, was saying that, you know, most people are going to be fine with this illness. I got the chance to meet Kevin Corbett, Dr. Kevin Corbett, who's one of the most intelligent people that I've ever met, and one of the most helpful, and he's featured in the film. And this man, from the very, very beginning, was about the only medic that was there when there were about six people protesting. It was him, it was Piers Corbyn, there were about four other people, and no one else. And he was out from the very beginning because he saw all of this during the HIV madness. And what I like about Kevin is Kevin questioned the whole thing. He questioned even the existence of this virus, this alleged virus. And I think these are very, very important questions that we definitely have to ask, whether you agree with it or not. And he took it right to the crux of the matter, I think. And he provided a huge amount of evidence, and not just him, lots of other people. And when questions were put to people like Drosten about their PCR test, were put to the vaccine manufacturers, none of them could say that they developed this vaccine on the basis of any kind of isolated or purified virus. It was some genomic sequence. And he's seen all this before, and many other doctors started to speak out and said they've seen all of this before. So suddenly, all of a sudden, we were going to believe everything that came out of China. We never trusted China before, but all of a sudden, Professor Zambon was telling the entire NHS England and that you're going to follow the NICE guidelines and you don't need to ask any questions. We're going to trust everything that's come from China. These are the sequences, you know, hey presto. And he put these questions forward that no one else was daring to ask. And it, to me, it made a lot of sense, at least ask these questions. And gradually, as you sort of moved around, we had all these marches where there were millions of people. We never heard of anyone getting ill. I was spending time with lots of people, hugging as much as I could. And, you know, we know this. I mean, you're a parent. We love our children. When they're sick, you don't put your children far away from you. You hold them even more tightly. When they vomit on your shoulder, when they cough all over you, the last thing you want to do when they're sick is put them away. You keep them close to you. There is this whole contagion nonsense. I mean, there's so much stuff. You can look at so much research if anyone cares to. But of course, it's not out there easily available. It was before 2020. Masks, there was so much data for the last 40 years about masks being totally useless. Even the dentistry profession, who would rely on masks quite a lot, have said they're quite useless as well. It's definitely not to stop any, you know, virus, that's for sure, if it exists, of course. And so all of these questions were being asked, but everyone was being censored. I think the Antarctica studies are very good because people were catching. Well, how could you catch something if you're isolated for months in Antarctica, if everyone's, you know, totally fine and all of a sudden they're all sick? Or people on a boat, they said this about scurvy, you know, they said, oh, it's got to be something like a contagious disease. Of course, it wasn't. It was just there's always an explanation if anyone cares to look, but it doesn't make money for the pharmaceutical industries. You see, the natural products and our earth of which we belong, all the answers are in the earth and all the answers are within us and the trees. And we're all, you know, we have a symbiotic relationship with the trees, interdependent relationship. This is all known. Of course, all the answers are in nature. They've just tried to make nature out to be something that is very, that we're very, you know, adverse to, when it's absolutely the opposite, because they want to bring something else in onto the market, mainly all of the different drugs, you see.
We'll talk about the film further. It's a must see. For one thing, it is very moving because you can tell these people are not actors. If they were actors, they should win Oscars, but the film like this will never win Oscars because the mainstream would never countenance that. But I digress. The stories, it's not a statistically significant sample, but it's obvious that these stories are authentic and thematically consistent. Now, the argument could be that these are end-of-life drugs and they might work and they help some people. How would you respond to somebody sponsored by the state who would say, well, Ash, you're stirring up fear and hatred here, but actually what you need to recognize is we've been experimenting to try to make other people's lives better. And some of these cases are tragic. We don't deny it, but we never intended to kill them.
It's the number of people that they moved who are sick, who needed a, you know, who are in hospital. They don't come to hospital to just have a lie-in, you see. So it's the numbers of people that were moved, 40, maybe more, 1,000 out of the care home, instructed. All the evidence I've read anyway shows that they were instructed to be moved out by Matt Hancock into the care home. No one had access to them. This is really... Yeah, of course, if you're going to say that there's this pandemic, but the point of the matter is that we always lived where we always with people who might be ill. We don't isolate people. It was an unprecedented behavior in recent times. I know these things have happened before, but we the thing is as well is so it's the numbers. So 40,000 out of a hospital, you know, all put on these drugs, and so many other people. You've seen this one lady in the film, Eleanor, 54 years old, right? Just a young man. Put on these drugs without any sort of knowledge of these individuals. Not no, where's the informed consent in all of this? You see,
yeah. And I think just for the sake of those who haven't seen the film, should explain that that is a documentary format, and yeah. This is personal testimony, and it's yes. heavily featuring people who have been put into what you might argue an inappropriate environment. Do you want to, just for those who haven't seen the film from a factual point of view, do you want to describe the structure of the film? This doesn't spoil the film at all, because it's information rather than some kind of a Hollywood drama. It is a drama, yeah. but it's a real life drama.
Yeah, so we got the testimonies of a number of people, as I said, from various ages. So we've got five different stories. So we got one with a baby of just under 1 year old who died at just under 1 year old. We've got, and that was systematic abuse of various different things, you see. In the end, it was one of the reasons for the death was an overdose of Oromorph, which was an adult, version of morphine. And they gave this to the baby. But there was a whole set of other things that also led to the death. And then on top of that, you've got the Epilim drug, which killed the 12-year-old girl. Mm. And we've also got midazolam and morphine, a young man who was 54 years old. And in front of his wife, he was killed. And then after that, we've also got two more testimonies. We got a lady who lost her husband because of the AstraZeneca jab. And he suffered from vaccine, I think it's VIT, I think it's called. And the final case, we also took testimonies from a doctor and a lawyer and a priest who's also the neurologist. And we also have another story where it looks like it was also midazolam and morphine and a cocktail of a number of other drugs that was put on a lady who was 76 years old and who went into hospital very, very, not very sick at all. And her condition really deteriorated whilst being in hospital on these drugs. So there's so many questions to be answered. I think all these people are looking for is the answers, the justice, and the truth, because how can you grieve? They haven't been able to grieve. You know, body parts of some of these children have been found in five different hospitals across the country, you see. And when all these sort of things happen, there is nothing to suggest any kind of care, only malice and quite vile intent, you see. And it takes me back when you look at history, and I was inspired also to set up Planet Uplift and set up the structure of this film. I was inspired by a film called Racial Hygiene, which I really suggest that people watch. There's no music in it. There's nothing to add any extra sentimentality. And the structure of that film, it's just very stark. You see, it's set particularly, it's called Racial Hygiene, it was set in 1933 to 1945, but focused a lot on the pre-war period and what it was highlighting, which a lot of people don't realize sometimes, that history is just hidden from us, is that so many people were sterilized, not just in Germany, but across Europe. There were many eugenics laws across Europe and many states in America at the point of 1933. The Rockefeller Foundation was funding the Max Planck Psychiatry Institute to try to find new conditions that they could put onto people. And so, for example, one of the testimonies was of a man who was sterilized simply as a child in 1933 because he didn't know the difference between a ladder and a staircase. So they said he was feeble-minded. Others, so many other diagnoses were made up, funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. And the tragic thing about these stories is this was not part of any kind of Nuremberg trial. In fact, some of these people didn't get recognized till 2007. We're talking about 74 years later, and many never got recognized. And euthanasia was taking place. Many people were euthanized. This was before the T4 program that became more known about because of the Nuremberg trial. So none of this was ever brought out in Nuremberg. And the reason I believe that was the case is because this was state, the states were involved because they had these laws in place. So this stuff was all covered. 20 doctors were prosecuted out of 90,000 who could have, not all of them necessarily were involved, but 90,000 doctors, surely 20 couldn't have been responsible for the deaths of all of these people. So all of this stuff never really went away. These people continued. These organizations like Sanofi, the names changed, but Sanofi has a history with the Nazi regime. Many companies continue, but they've amalgamated, they've formed other organizations, but the people continued in positions of power. And this is very, very worrying. So I think eugenics never really went away. And I think that, I'm sorry to say this, but I do think this needs to be investigated because I'm very sure that there is a lot of eugenics type of things going on here. When you really look deeply into these stories, and I've obviously spent a lot of time with these people, I didn't just start to interview them straight away. I spent a lot of time, and I said to them, if you don't want to speak, that's absolutely fine. But, you know, we became good friends over the course of this time. And I've still not actually put out Anne's interview yet, because until Anne is happy with it, I'm not going to do that, the long format interview, because she wants to come across as, you know, very coherent as possible, not getting too emotionally upset. So I respect that about her. And so we're going to take our time. And the point I'm trying to make is that I've known them for a long time. I've seen the documentation. I've spent a lot of time with them. And, you know, the more you look into it, the more you realize that, and other people have contacted me as well. There's just too many people, Lembit. You know, there's so many people involved that have been harmed. You can't just, why are people just contacting me constantly to tell me this happened to them? It can't just be that everyone's, you know, there is so, and I know so many people who've been harmed by the jabs, you know, this is horrendous, and I really do believe that they're still calling it safe and effective. There's still no acknowledgement, and this is really very, very upsetting. I mean, from my perspective, for these people, see, I can say something for myself. What I've learned about all of this is you've really got to take care of your own health. It's the most important, because if you put yourself in a position where you're not in good health, you're likely to end up in the hospital. You're likely to be panicked, frightened, under pressure. You will take medication, and once you're on medication, you get sick. And, you know, once you're on that medication, more medications then come along, you see. I think one of the things we've got to look after ourselves, that is the most important thing, I think, so that we don't end up in this position. But for these families, they're in it, and I can't begin to understand what they're going through. You know, we just can empathize, but what they're going through, the trauma they're going through, I mean, it's unimaginable. And all we want to do for them is that they just want the truth. They just want answers. They just want someone to know that they want to have faith in humanity, because they've lost trust, because people they trusted have let them down. Really, so many people.
Okay, hold that thought, because I want to come back to you in just a minute. Essentially, the story so far, a lot of people have been let down by the system. Public use for experimentation. People lost their lives because of end-of-life drugs, which may not have been necessary and been given without either informed consent, let's call it. And, of course, the big question, what should be done about it? We're going to go through those together with some of the comments that I've been seeing coming in on this very moving subject in tntradio.live chat. We'll come back to that, and we'll come back to Ash in just a moment as well. You're watching the Lembitopic Show here on TNT. I'll see you in a minute.
I was a quarterback at Hardaway High School. College first round draft pick, on and off the field. We were taught to not show any signs of weakness. During the football season, I would stop eating. But I didn't know I was depressed. I thought that something was wrong with me. For 20 plus years, was physical, physical, physical. We didn't have any education behind what mental health was. I started to learn it starts here first. If this is together, I'll be better as a father, as a man, and as a husband. Put the importance on your mental health. I'm not scared to talk about it anymore. The first tool is therapy. The second one is positive self-talk. And then journaling, putting your thoughts on paper. We have to redefine what being a strong man is and heal, love, your mind.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received 2 stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Lembit Opik on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the show. A quarter of an hour to go. We're still with Ash Mahmood, who's director of Playing God, which is a very candid account of what you might euphemistically call end-of-life drugs, but causing end-of-life drugs would be the case, would be the claim that Mahmood, I think, would say, that Ash Mahmood would say as well. A few comments here. Mazzy says, on April 12th, 1955, Jonas Salk's polio vaccine made by inactivating poliovirus with formaldehyde was declared to be safe and effective. The trial of Salk's vaccine had included 1.8 million children who were inoculated with either vaccine made by the Eli Lilly or Park Davis or placebo, or were not inoculated but only observed. Interesting. Very interesting. Thanks for that. Madrid says, my wife took the AstraZeneca bioweapon, which, as you can imagine, has caused in-house family problems due to being coerced because her parents were elderly and ill. A few more comments here. I can't go through everything. Wee Fat Chug's got a very interesting comment, but it's a bit long for me to read just now. Little Carol says, I found a reference to midazolam and morphine in a bestseller crime book from 2014. I'm bringing my copy to show you all at the Weekend Truth Festival in Cumbria. Many more comments. I don't want to go through everything here. Matt Madrid has evidence is on camera. End of life. So-and-so, Matt Hancock says. A lot more conversation there. Mazzy says, please then, but that would be good to hear what can be done, especially when I was told I had a case of not only negligence, but worse, and no legal representative would touch my case. I wonder why. So there is an aspect here, Ash. What can be done about this? These essentially, if the public's been used for experimentation without informed consent, what can the public do, bearing in mind it's both traumatic and expensive in time and money to take these cases?
So first of all, through this film, as an example, one of the purposes of the film, it's like a sort of truth. And the reason I set up Planet Uplift is because I know it might have been, you know, I was thinking of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which was where people could have a voice. They weren't prosecuted, but they had a voice to speak. I'm not saying that here people shouldn't be prosecuted, but there was something very powerful about looking at it when I think it was Archbishop Desmond Tutu. I mean, I don't know how you know what really went on there, but on the surface, you saw all these people coming out and speaking their truth. And what happened during this whole 4 years is the censorship, the arrests. I mean, my mother was arrested for trying to save people's lives, or at least inform them, because there was no informed consent. As a mother, as a grandmother, as a person who loves, adores children, she was one of the brave souls that went outside schools and was arrested. But the police said about my mum, they said to my brother about my mum, if there were more people with compassion like her, this whole thing would end. But there were just a few people. There's a lot of confrontation. There's a lot of division. There's a lot of people not able to accept their own issues that they have. And I think what we have to do is we always have to take it back to ourselves. I mean, I can't change anybody, and I'm not here to do that. I have a responsibility to my son. I have a responsibility to the children that I teach. And so when they ask questions, I always give them an answer that I think is the right answer, but always tell them that you've got to make your own decisions. You've got to do what you think is right and ask them the question, what do you think? And but it's the trouble is they're not given all the facts. You see, none of us have been given the truth. We probably still don't know all the truth. And sometimes we just have to also accept that there's some things we just won't know fully. But there's some things that we do know from our own experiences. And I believe these people in the film very, very deeply. And I think what we really must do, first of all, is we've got to spend some time going into finding out who we truly are, because very few of us really know who we are. We don't really. That's why we're very worried. We get a bit worried. We're just conditioned from birth to follow, take a ticket and follow everybody else. They're all doing it, so I better do it. I better wear these clothes because that's this thing. I don't want to get too bright. I don't wear bright clothes. Everyone's wearing gray clothes. I better wear gray. It's autumn, you know. So we're all just sort of following everyone else. A few people rock the boat. A few people stand up, and sometimes we get pushed and we say, no, I'm not going to wear that mask. I'm not going to be a Guantanamo Bay detainee here. So just what it is, we've got to really, this can all be solved. But we've got to find, the only war we're at is the war with ourselves. And they know this, these people, whoever, whatever you want to call it, the entities, whoever's involved in this, they know that, you know, they're planting all these ideas, confusing us. We've got to reject it all. We've got to let go, and we've got to come back to who we truly are. And then all the answers can be found. And then we've got to then be the example that we wish to see, which is an example of love. We've got to love ourselves first. If we have no self-respect, then it will show up everywhere. Then we've got to learn to love other people, build good relationships. Okay, we've got to have a, we're just not taught this. We're just not taught. We've then got to make sure that we deliver this to our children, because they will then develop into caring people. We've got to nurture them. We can't put them in some nursery and let someone else look after them. We've got to stop all sending everyone to work for these horrible corporations who are exploiting the women. We've got to come back and become a family unit again. Get together, share and love and care, spend time, build a community, treat other children like they're our own children, which we should. And like it takes a whole, they say it takes a whole village to, you know, raise a child. And it really does. And we've lost that. We're all divided. We're all on our own. A lot of people are isolated, living on our own. This whole thing exposed that. Poor people living all alone. Mental health went through the roof. People committing suicide. Young men, women. I mean, this is crazy. Divided, separate. You can't go near each other. You know, teenagers getting it. You don't go near there. Don't go near that woman, otherwise, you know, something, you might get accused of something, so I better step back and walk really far away. It's just divisive. Everything's dividing us. But if we can just get back to ourselves and spend a bit of time on our own, trying to find out who we are in nature, where we come from, not in this city life, not this city slicker stuff, and spend some time and then try to understand who we really are, get together with other people, share. There's a lot of other people now willing and hungry and wanting, they're wanting some better solution. Everyone's crying out for this. Even people who are apparently, these people who are not awake, they're sort of, kind of, everybody is, no one's really awake. This is all a nonsense. We're all awakening. It's an ongoing journey. We make mistakes every day, right? No one's perfect, but that's okay. That's nothing wrong with that. But we've got to come with things from love. And we've got to build a community from the grassroots and just be the change that we wish to see, I think. And it right. will take time. It can't happen straight. I know it's not going to happen overnight, but we can do it bit by bit. Every life saved is very valuable.
Now, you sound tremendously reasonable. You speak in a calm tone. You don't shout. You're not using bad language. I put it to you that you're a genteel revolutionary. Because what you're actually talking about goes against the cult of individualism, which is actually ironically a cult of conformity, by which I mean this. You're talking about family units, and yet we're told everyone can be whatever gender they want now, and we have to respect that, and you can go to prison if you say the wrong thing, in Scotland particularly. You say that we have to question a lot of the authority. The authority say, well, that's dangerous talk, Ash. You're going to kill people because they're not going to follow the program. And we know the vaccine saved hundreds of thousands of lives. What would you say to those who say that you are basically a genteel revolutionary and you're dangerous to society?
Wow, that's quite an accusation they make. I mean, I can't, I would say that you have to just not take it to heart. You have to not be bothered. People will call you all sorts of things. I've been called all sorts of names, and you just not got to take it to heart. And I don't want to make, I can't say any comment. They can accuse me of that. And if they want to believe that, that's absolutely fine. I just want to do what I know to be right, which is from my gut, follow my heart, And I just feel sensitive to people. I just feel moved by people, and I try to find the goodness in everybody. And there's goodness in every single person. I don't want this us and them mentality. I think there's a lot of people in the freedom movement also who they need to ask some serious questions about themselves. They need to look at their own health. You know, on one hand they're preaching about, you know, oh, pharma's bad. On the other hand, then next minute, on the other hand, they're taking some other pharma drugs anyway. They're criticizing the hospital, but the next minute they're going in there for treatment to the hospital. So if you're going to stand for something, then you really got to stand for it. There's no point, you know, one hand you say, I'm not taking these jabs, oh, but I'll have a nice glass of Coca-Cola, or I'm going to have a, you know, all this horrible, what is it, these packets of crisps, because you're not going to be an example then to of health, are you? I think one of the problems is we just don't look after it. Then we're quick to blame. I don't want to blame anybody, really. I don't want to blame anybody. There's good people working in the hospital. We've all had people, there are good people that have had some good experiences in our life. But you just got to be, you know, it's the protocol, it's the system. And when one person gets into a system, it's very hard, because it's like you're going against the flow of the river. Only the salmon are very good at going against the flow. Mm. We have to really become like salmon, but it's very tough going uphill. And I think the trouble is that when you're on your own and you're trying to challenge a system, it's not that the people are bad individually. They're just very afraid. They're bought into a slave system because their livelihood depends on it. And they're one paycheck away. Most of us are one paycheck away from being homeless and, you know, in deep trouble. So we're very much under control. We can't grow our own food. Most of us don't know how to grow. We don't know how to survive. We can't survive in the wild. We've made us very comfortable. They've softened us and comforted us and made us like basically prisoners, like under house arrest, where Netflix is there and it all looks comfortable. So we're prisoners, but we're comfortable prisoners. And that's the danger that happened to us, you see.
This is interesting. Yeah. Now, I hadn't thought about it like this before, Ash, but the way you described that, we are basically living in prisons where the gates aren't locked, but we choose to pull the gate closed anyway. Mm. And it's done, to quote a song by a progressive rock band from the late 60s and early 70s, Soft Machine. It begins with a blessing and ends with a curse, making life easy by making it worse. And what you seem to be suggesting is that what we're offered is so attractive, so beguiling, that we don't question authority and we put up with the bits that we might not like just because it's easier.
Yeah, that's really what's going on. You know, you see that with the head teachers. None of the head teachers spoke up about the fact that basically, when they really look at it on the face of it, what they were doing were they became drug pushers. Let's not pretend. They became drug pushers. They could have said, look, don't do it in our school premises. Go and do it at the surgery, right? That's where health is. Why is health happening here in the school? They're still doing it. They're still offering. So more and more jabs are being offered at schools. They just don't have the backbone, and they're very afraid. Some of them are very afraid. They're afraid of this. What kind of head teacher is this? Like hiding in his room because he didn't want to get COVID, this alleged COVID. I mean, this is not a man who's really the leader of the school. He's a puppet. And these people, they're paid very handsomely. Then they invest in bigger things. So they're now going to get a bigger house, going to send their children to a better school, a private school, going to get a bit more health insurance. So suddenly all their lives to maintain that high standard, like you said, that comfort, they're really trapped in that system. And also the tough thing is if you decide that you want to step out of that system, it's very tough. Like I found it very tough in my school because I'm just about the only one who spoke out and did anything or didn't go with the whole, you know, following any of this nonsense, really for the kids' sake, to be honest. And it's very tough. Yes, it's very tough. And not everyone can do that. And of course, it could be a point where I'll be told that it's, you know, it's time for you to move on or kicked out. So yes, it's very tough. And that's why I realized that all you really got to do and can do is you've got to really plan very carefully. You've got to do the best that you can, and you've really got to focus on yourself, because if you're in a better position, if you're in an optimal health, good mental health, not getting caught up in mind viruses as well and getting wrapped up in all the chaos, all the little things that they keep planting, all the negative energy, because there's always someone bringing their negative energy, their problems towards you. And you just want to, not to say you don't want to help people, but just you also got to protect yourself a little bit, protect your energy a little bit. You got to give something back to other people as well, your children and so forth. And well, so I think the important thing is just to work on yourself, because if you're in good condition, you're going to be better condition to fight all of this. You're going to be in better condition, like the salmon going up the river.
Where can we? It's interesting. I often use that analogy myself as well. Where can people see the film, Ash?
So at the moment, the film is being shown on UK Column. So you can look at UK Column and watch it there. Also on Robert Kennedy Jr.'s platform, the Children's Health Defence TV are showing the film as well. You can watch the film anytime on UK Column as well. And very soon as after that, we'll be looking at other places to release it too. So please do check that out over there.
Thank you. It's fascinating always to speak with you, Ash. That's Ash Mahmood, who's really trying to waken people up to the potential for democide, state-sponsored killing of people, a form of state-sponsored murder. But we're out of time. So I thank Ash and my other guests today. I'll be back again tomorrow. That's 10 o'clock GMT, 11 a.m. British Summer Time. You'll be able to work it out from that. But 10 o'clock Greenwich Mean Times, wherever you are in the world, with some great guests again. I want to thank my team, Charlotte and everyone in the gallery today, and my guests as well. They make the show. More than anything, I want to thank you. We've had an eclectic mix. We've had comedians, we've got filmmakers, and we've got freedom fighters too. I hope that you feel that I am living up to the promise of being a defender of free speech here. Do have your chat. Keep the chat going at tntradio.live. As I say, I'll be back at 10 a.m. GMT tomorrow. Don't miss me. Stay with TNT. This is the home of free speech. I'm Len Bitopic. This is the Len Bitopic Show. This is today's News Talk TNT. I'll see you tomorrow.